I'm pretty confident Diaz loves the Mets, loves being here, loves pitching in New York. He seems very happy, always has, anytime you talk to him about it. Having said that, I think there's some thought in the industry that, hey, at your age, this is your last bite at the apple of getting a huge contract. And it's like the Dodgers and the Padres gave Wandy Peralta like a 4-year deal a while back. The Dodgers spent all that money on Tanner Scott and Kirby Yates last offseason. So
yeah, how'd that work out?
Well, it's not, and maybe that's bad timing for Diaz because maybe they're thinking that. I don't know. But my point being that there's usually a team willing to stretch further for a reliever, especially an elite reliever, than the Mets might be. They like Diaz, but if someone's offering 4 years, I don't think this is going to be as much of a rubber stamp as it was last time when, if you remember, they agreed to that record extension for a closer during the GM meeting.
Yeah, right away.
First thing. Yeah. I would be surprised if it was that simple this time because it's his, like I said, it's his last chance in his prime years to really go out there and get a new big deal.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, October the 26th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on the new and improved, as always, Talking Mets podcast website. You could check out our premium content there, the chat room, leave me a message, whatever you want. Check it out, talkingmetspodcast.com. Welcome in to another, what I would say, pre-hot stove October off-season edition of the Talking Mets podcast. We're in the home stretch of the 2025 season coming to an end. Another week of World Series baseball. Actually, you know, not a great game one, but so far I think the Dodgers and the Blue Jays, have shown it'll be a little bit more of a series. Although, big win by the Dodgers going into Toronto, tough place to play, and shutting down the Jays. Yamamoto giving Mets fans of what could have been if he had taken the Mets offer, another complete game. Some old school baseball, clearly starting pitching has been part of the conversation throughout the postseason. And what's really interesting is that throughout the month of October, we've set it up where we talked about the offense, we talked about run prevention, we talked about starting pitching, and now to end the setting it up or setting the table up for the offseason, we're going to talk briefly about the bullpen, because it's a very short conversation that starts and ends with Edwin Diaz. And then, special guest joining us again, you guys know him. He's the great Ernest Dove over at the New York Mets Dove Report. Nobody better in mainstream or independent media that covers the Mets minor leagues and knows not only the system, knows not only who the players are, he knows behind the scenes how the organization works and thinks. And he could give us a real synopsis of really what's going on in the Arizona Fall League. That's usually a precursor of some players that either could be a part of the big league roster or maybe are going to be jumping up into the core prospect rankings the year after. What will the Mets be looking to do this offseason with some of their prospects? Who's a keeper? Who's not? What does he think about some of the current coaches that have been hired? We haven't gotten to the pitching coach yet. What does he think about that and the organization philosophies? And he's been one of the guys out there that has said, hey, it's not just about who the coach and what the coach wants. The Mets are building their infrastructure from a coaching perspective in the mold of what David Stern wants. So we'll chat with Ernie about that and tons of other topics for a long and wide-ranging conversation that is really the heart and soul of this week's show. But I wanted to kick it off briefly and get into the final part of the three prongs of what we've been doing here. We've talked about the offense and run prevention. We talked in depth about the starting pitching. And now we're going to talk about the bullpen. And the bullpen is probably, out of all the facets of the Mets roster, the most difficult to predict. And there's a simplicity to it because it starts and ends with Edwin Diaz. But throughout his first couple of years of his tenure, David Stearns has really used the bullpen as the ultimate chemistry experiment on the roster. And I think he's even talked about it. The bullpen that you leave spring training with is not the bullpen that you end the season with. None of that was more true than this past September when you had guys like Gregory Soto and Rogers coming in on and being part of the mix. Really like Rogers, obviously, and we'll see where the Mets go with re-signing their own free agents. The only significant move that's been made so far in the offseason from the big league roster standpoint was Dick Lovelady's back, and I'll actually bring that up to Ernie because the thought is that kind of a precursor of that type of pitcher with the process that the Mets are trying to employ? What does a Dick Lovelady have that the Mets like as they try to rebuild their bullpen? And I think that's really the big thing when it comes down to rebuilding bullpens or the Mets in particular. There's for every Taylor Rogers out there, for every Gregory Soto, for every free agent like Rozell Iglesias, the Mets like a Dick Lovelady. The Mets like players that are on the fringes that they have the ability to bring into the lab and maybe make their stuff into something more than what it is. Reed Garrett has been one success story, and he was actually acquired under the Billy Epler regime. Some of the guys last year, the Justin Hagemans, I mean, Oscar Brazenbaum, who they acquired the year before, have just not cut the mustard over the long haul. And, you look at Brandon Waddell or whatever it may be. These are just guys that have shuttled in and out, have had some moments, but really haven't been solutions. And one of the things we've talked about time and time again, and we didn't get a chance to see the latest stab at that in Dylan Ross, is that the Mets have just not developed any kind of failed starter or any kind of arm that's just for the bullpen in a while, in a long time. I mean, Edwin Diaz has been their closer since 2019. He was acquired outside the organization. The Mets haven't, since Jerry's Familia, and that was a long time ago, developed a top-notch elite arm, and Familia is the perfect example. There was a guy that was a starter. He was going to be okay. He was flaming out a little bit as a starter. Went into the bullpen. Turns out he is the closer on a team that won a pennant. And he was a really good closer for about a 3 or 4 year period. Now, that's where you kind of go and you start the conversation, because Familia and how the usage of Familia turned out and his expiration date, I think is really part of the conversation here with Edwin Diaz. Now, starting with Edwin Diaz and starting with his potential free agency. And we don't know, as of today, we don't know if he's going to opt out. Everybody has been reporting that it's a fait accompli, but I'm not so sure. When you really start to look at the numbers, you start to look at the contract that's on the table, and you look at what potentially the Mets will have to decide on and what Diaz will have to decide on, there isn't a lot of money still out there for Diaz to grab as he's set the market for closers. And right now, whether it be Josh Hader's recent contract or Tanner Scott, who signed the deal I thought was a bad deal that the Dodgers signed a year ago, there's not much else for closers to get other than that 19-20 AAV four-year deal somewhere in that capacity. And right now, if you look at Edwin Diaz, if he decides to opt in, has 2 more years of player opt-in this offseason and then next year. And if you look at deferred money, the actual value of the contract's about $18 million. There's some deferred money which brings it down. I'm not sure how that would go into factoring Diaz's thoughts on opting out. But then there's the team option 3 years from now. That's a $20 million team option. I think there's deferrals on that too. And, that would be a situation where the Mets could walk away from Diaz. And when he signed that initial contract, which was for 5 years or 6 years, was it? Because I'm trying to look at this now. Diaz's contract, so that was 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. It was a 5 year deal. I think they tacked it on to something that he had already had of his current contract. It was a reasonable deal, and it gave the Mets some protection and Diaz some protection if he outgrew the contract later in the life of it. Now, the Mets lost a year, and that was his first year of the deal, 23, where he was injured. But when you start to really dissect it here, if Diaz goes out on the market, he'd be clearly the best relief arm on the market. What would be the appetite for such an arm? You got a limited group of teams. Maybe Philadelphia, who already has Duran. Maybe San Diego, maybe. Not sure there. The Dodgers, they have Scott. I mean, the Dodgers seem to have no limit to their spending, but okay, we'll throw the Dodgers in there. Not so sure about San Francisco. Chicago Cubs, not so sure on that, given a closer, $20 million per year. Yankees, Red Sox already have Chapman, and they've kind of solidified there. I'm not so sure about any of the AL West or AL Central teams that work on tighter budgets and tighter payrolls. So when you start to really look at the chessboard here, Diaz doesn't have a lot of options, and if he's going to opt out, he better have good intelligence from his agent that there's going to be some kind of bidding war to scare the Mets a little bit. Now, you heard Andy Martino in the clip walking in. The Mets like Diaz. It may not be as rubber stamped as it was last time. What I think the conversation has to come down to with Cohen and the Mets is, do they rework the contract they have now, maybe tack on one more year, maybe eliminate the club option, give him some certainty for that third year, figure out something with it, maybe a mutual option or maybe some kind of buyout that exceeds the $1 million. And with that, get the job done. Diaz kind of opts into the rest of that. The Mets work on the back end. It's almost like a, you know, tearing up the old contract and pulling up a new one. Just essentially getting him the 3 years security that he would have, with maybe the fourth year being some kind of option or some kind of mutual option or something like that. Not that Diaz, who's going to be 32 come spring training, is going to have the market value in 4 years that he has now. This is probably his last best shot. I think, honestly, though, when you look at it, the last contract was a good one. Really, they already have on the table the structure of what a new deal would be. The uncertainty is the next 2 years with the Mets having no certainty about Diaz opting out. Diaz has no certainty on that third year with the team option. Why don't you just bridge the gap? Team picks up the $20 million option on a new contract, makes that guaranteed. Diaz opts into the next 2 years. You have a three-year deal plus an option for the fourth year. And maybe you have some, like I said, have some kind of a stronger buyout or something along those lines. To me, it makes too much sense. And really, the Mets don't have a choice. That's the more important thing. The Mets don't have a choice. If the Mets are going to play chemistry experiment with this bullpen, and there's no indication after the Dick Lovelady signing earlier this offseason that they're going to stop, you need to have your solidified guarantee. And right now, Edwin Diaz is arguably the best closer in baseball. He's right up there. I know that other pitchers might have better statistics, but when you look at him, yes, he's not striking out hitters at the prodigious rate of 2022, but he's actually better in a lot of ways. He's able to get soft contact. He's able to be more economical, especially if he has to go a couple of innings. You saw him do that later in the year, and he's able to maybe go out there and, you know, pitch to contact, soft contact. But he could also be dominant. Look how he dominated the Cubs late in the year with that two-inning save at Wrigley Field. That's the kind of closer that, especially when you get into a postseason situation, shortens the ball game and gives you a guarantee that you have the maybe the most elite arm out of anybody on your roster for up to six outs on any given night in the postseason. I mean, think about it. Diaz, in a short spurt for a couple of innings, and certainly for one inning, might have the best stuff of anybody out there. Now, what's the risk? The risk is he's a two-pitch pitcher. The risk is that his fastball, which has shown some decreased velocity over the last couple of years, continues to decline and becomes a bigger issue because then he becomes a very predictable slider pitcher. Does that impact the bite on his slider or even the chase on his slider? Can you predict that Diaz will be elite at least for 3 or 4 years? It's all over the map when it comes to relievers historically in baseball, where they fall off. You have relievers that start late in their career that were former starters like Dennis Eckersley who could pitch into the late 30s at an elite rate. You look at the Goose Gossages and players like that. Billy Wagner, when he came to the Mets, he was in his late prime, mid-30s, and even after he got Tommy John surgery, went to Atlanta and had in his late 30s, had a dominant season, and he only retired because he wanted to spend time with his family. Trevor Hoffman, very good into his mid-30s. Jurys Familia, I mean, look at Jurys Familia when you really boiled down to it. He became the Mets' primary closer in 2015. He was 25 years old, And he pretty much stayed at the level. And he was never at the level of Diaz, mind you. But he was a very solid top-tier closer for about till you know the age of 28, 29. He had some shoulder issues at that point. So he was a little bit younger when he fizzled out. But, you know, that's the other portion. You could see a pitcher just undo themselves. You know, as part of that was extreme usage probably back-to-back years under Terry Collins. I think the Mets have done a much better job of, even when Diaz gets hot, managing his workload. So the odds of him expiring at the same rate of a Familia or overused reliever is probably pretty low with the way the Mets do things. Now, one of the problems the Mets have had is they haven't been able to, when he's been on the field, the 1 year they did it, he got hurt, which was 2023 with Robertson coming in. They haven't been able to find that second consistent closer. Rodgers did a little bit of that this past season when, you know, Helsley didn't work out. And that's really the thing here. If Diaz opts out, that's a good sign that he's probably not coming back, because when you look at what I said, the gap here between what he could get and what his current contract structure without the guarantees here are, it's not a big difference. And then you look at some of the other options out there, and you look at Helsley, who was all sorts of messed up when he was here. You look at Rozel Iglesias, who's a free agent, who's seen some declines as the closer for the A's. You know, Taylor Rogers is a good pitcher. I want him back throwing ground balls. I'm not sure he's a closer at this point. So, you know, you go up and down. I'm looking at some of the other guys. Robert Suarez, he's got an opt-out. You know, Nick Martinez, he's done some starting. None of the other big potential closers, the Pete Fairbanks, that's a club option. Andres Munoz, that's a club option for Seattle. Emilio Pagan is an unrestricted free agent. Sir Anthony Dominguez, these are not close. There's nobody at the level of what Diaz is. Not even close. So if he opts out, unless the Mets are playing a little game of chicken and hoping he comes back on a better deal, which I sincerely doubt, then, you know, it just makes too much sense for them to figure this thing out before he even hits free agency. I'm sorry. It's not the same as the Pete Alonso situation. And if the Mets are going to play chemistry experiment or do that without Diaz in that bullpen, they're asking for a load of trouble. No matter what they do to improve their rotation, no matter how good Nolan McClain is in those kids, Tong and Sprout, even if they start going consistently 6th to 7th inning, every night you're going to at least 9.5 out of 10 times get 6 outs in that bullpen, at least. And if 3 of them in a close game is Diaz, it's really only 3 outs, and it's much easier to figure that out while you're playing a chemistry experiment bullpen than without him. If you go out and you try to sign a starter or try to piece together, basically what Boston did with Chapman, maybe it works out like Chapman did, Kenley Jansen, something like that. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it becomes a complete disaster. And you don't want to be on the complete disaster. You don't want to be how the Yankees were searching, and they were fortunate. They got David Bednar. You don't really want to be searching for a closer at the deadline. Can relief pitchers become available? Sure. But they're not going to be at the level of a Diaz. It's going to be like, Finnegan, Kyle Finnegan, somebody like that along the way. Now, if I'm the Mets, I would expect them to at least see if they can sign somebody. And Finnegan is one of those potential names. You know, maybe the Mets could do what the Red Sox did with Chapman, bring him in, wasn't sure if he'd be the closer. Then he goes out and he's lights out. Can you do that with Rozel Iglesias? Would some of these veterans sign with the Mets if Diaz is back, knowing they're not going to get a lot of save opportunities? And I think that would be, from a signing perspective, where they would go. I would certainly try to bring back Tyler Rogers. I don't think Helsley's an option coming back, rebuild himself on a one-year deal. I think he'll do that elsewhere. I think it goes down to a veteran like a Jansen or an Iglesias to back up Diaz, maybe on a one-year deal. Bring back a Rogers. They already got one lefty in Brooks Raley who they'll bring back on a very reasonable club option. I know Minter's not going to make it to start opening day, so would they go out and look for another lefty? Would that be bringing back Soto? Would that be somebody else? That remains to be seen. But in general, this all begins and ends with Diaz, and I just think the conversation isn't all that complicated. You got to do it. He's got to do it. It makes too much sense. Both parties, you know, Diaz likes being here. He's comfortable. He's got himself in a groove. In a way that he probably didn't have coming into New York, in a way that it took him a couple of years to find himself in New York. And the Mets have a closer that can handle it here, got big outs in the postseason, and you're going to need him to get more big outs in the postseason if you plan on being a threat next year in any way, in any significant way possible. You don't want to play bargain bin with the closer position. You want to do it with the sixth and seventh inning. Drives me crazy, but yeah. You want to do it the seventh and eighth inning. More dangerous. You want it, but they could probably figure something out. I mean, they'll bring some guys in. You want to do it every night with the closer position? A lot of heartbreak. And those kill seasons and those demoralized clubs, those make fan bases angry. Those give the media fodder. And those tend to not just be one loss, even though you could say it's as good as the next day's pitcher. Those tend to spiral because they have a hangover effect. And they blow winnable games that at the end of the year, you look up at the stand and say, we should be in the postseason or we should win the division, but we gave away XYZ. You saw it in May of last year when Diaz was one of those unpredictable, in 2024, I should say, not last year, when Diaz had his coming back from injury reboot and he was bad and he had to go on the IL. The Mets not having a closer, it was a mess. That was part of the hole they dug themselves before the OMG summer. So anyway, that's pretty much a simple, it's not a complicated situation, the Diaz and the bullpen. You got to have Diaz back. You got to get yourself a veteran, short-term second closer that could back up Diaz. You address your own free agents. I think Rogers is a perfect guy to bring back. Maybe you get another lefty. And then they're going to play value bin on the rest of the bullpen. You know it. I know it. You may like it. You may not like it. At this point, there's not a heck of a lot we can do. It's the Stearns philosophy. You got to sit back and find a way to win under those guidelines. And if it doesn't work, then eventually either he'll change or Stearns won't be here or his team won't be here. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Ernie Dove is going to be talking about the Arizona Fall League, the Mets participants in the Arizona Fall League, the coaching hires, organization philosophy. What prospects should we, in his opinion, see the Mets keep and not make part of any deal, including Tarik Skubal? A lot to talk about and more right after this.
1-2. Bleeder. Right field. Nick Borabito continues to find a way. It's going to be 3-1. Scottsdale, the throw to third, is going to go into the dugout. Carpathio's got too aggressive, trying to cut down Williams. That's going to score another run and make it 4-1.
Payoff pitch. This ball is launched into right center. That one is gone right in the same spot that Sam Peterson hit his two-run shot. Back-to-back homers here for the Scorpions. And now they have a four spot on the board. 4-0, the Scorpions lead. That's Suaro's third home run here in the Arizona Fall League.
We're back, and our good friend, if you want to know about what's going on in the Mets minors and you're not following the Dove Report, you're missing out. I say this all the time. He's joining us. What better guy as we have the final week of baseball? World Series should be wrapped up within the next week or so. Hot stove will begin. We've started the hot stove here in New York a little early. There's a little chill out there now in New York. He's down in Florida enjoying the warm weather and probably spending a lot of time watching the kids out in the Arizona Fall League. Let's talk about that and more with Ernest Dove. Ernie, what's going on, man? Thanks for coming on again.
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me back on your show.
You're a YouTube sensation, so this is just audio. We will let everybody know now that he's a YouTube sensation. It is Ernie Dove. He has his hair nicely coiffed. He has that great smile that he always has. So he is, but you're only hearing the audio today. So you've been a busy bee, Ernie, since really the deadline in a lot of ways. Mets, obviously, the prospects were a big part of the deadline. You've been talking about the coaches and, you know, the organization philosophies on both ends of the baseball. So you've been busy, and now I think it's going to be a busy winter for you with the Arizona Fall League, decisions the Mets have to make with the 40-man, and more importantly, I think we're going to finally see some activity on the prospect front, maybe at the winter meetings.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things I've joked about for a couple of years now, also assuming positively that the Mets are now going to be a yearly all-in playoff team, whoops, but So starting this past offseason or past trade deadline, I did start to think that going forward, they're going to be buyers all the time. So as the minor league junkie, I already know I continue my grieving process that now includes making videos of all the prospects going the wrong way, away from our Metsies. But this is kind of something that I think is going to be the trend. And I know it's considered the bias or the shill or whatever, but The reality of things is the Mets are built to be a consistent playoff contender. Now, I don't want to get into the jokes about them failing again, but
right.
This is where we at now as a Mets franchise, including this winter. I am assuming that multiple prospects are going to be on the move one way or another.
Absolutely. And I think part of what fans sometimes forget, and even those pundits that go and talk about the rosters, there's only so many spots on the roster. And in the offseason, this is very important. There is no 60-man IL. There has to only be no more than 40 players on the roster. If you count Edwin Diaz opt-out as a fait accompli, I'm not. They're at 39 right now. But if you want to have that argument, it's 38. Mets only currently, assuming they tender a contract to their arbitration-eligible players, they only have two spots on the 40-man. And they have a couple of guys in the Arizona Fall League that are playing for those spots because there'll be Rule 5 potential picks in December. And then I think what I see in the AFL is the Mets trying to figure out, do they have any bullpen arms in this system, controllable bullpen arms, knowing that the rotation is going to get expensive, the roster is going to get expensive. They're going to need to start doing what the Dodgers do, what some of these other teams do, and bring up arms. So I see that as kind of like the AFL and the focus. Usually these are players that have some near-term impact, if I'm not mistaken, on decision-making within the front office.
Yeah, there's always different forms of perspectives of why guys specifically go to the Arizona Fall League. Some of the ones that are in like Dominican Republic, those are some serious legit leagues out there in winter ball. Arizona Fall League, and I even joked about it in my recent interview with Brett Banks, who's in the Arizona Fall League playing as one of the representatives of the Mets. And it's kind of like a version of an all-star team of prospects. I know people have asked, like, what level of play is it? Well, using our own Mets example, pretty much the entire Mets affiliate of guys chosen and selected, they're pretty much all AA level of sorts. It doesn't mean the league itself plays at a AA level in Arizona Fall League, but I would think minimum it's at least AA level competition in my mind. And then obviously there's a couple of main guys out there. Obviously I love Brett Banks because I interviewed him, but he's gotten off to a slow start. He began the season on the IL, so he's kind of one of those prospects. I don't know if he reaches the majors in 2026, but you have a guy like Nick Morabito, like that's the guy. What do we do with a guy who's now technically Rule 5 eligible? And based on his age when he got drafted, he's one of those guys that sneaks in like a year early. Usually other guys around his age-ish, they wouldn't be eligible until next year. So you have to push the envelope a bit for a guy like Nick Morabito. So it's like, what do you do? Now, I'm thinking like we've had these arguments before, and I used the example of a Jake Mangum who was kind of like, oh, he was Rule 5. They didn't get him. They didn't have him protected. And one of the reasonings they go for a guy like Jake Mangum, it's like, well, because he doesn't have a lot of power, we like to assume we have other guys that are in the range. So it's kind of like we can replace a Mangum if he's selected. And I feel like the same argument is going to start being made for Nick Morabito, who was a lot younger at this stage than Mangum was as a college senior sign when he was eligible. So it's kind of like, well, we like him. He's doing great every year. I think power, power, power is the main reason why nobody wants to protect him. Everybody wants to feel he's replaceable as a prospect.
So we're looking at, we'll start Morabito. Morabito plays all three outfield positions, righty bat, speed, you know, almost stole 50 bases for Binghamton this past season. Profiles, Mangum was a very interesting comp. I mean, backup outfielder, maybe, you know, second division or component driven starter on a roster that has a lot of payroll and needs to plug a couple of inexpensive holes. Morabito, good with the glove, fourth outfielder. You know, could play center field. Obviously, center field still open for the Mets technically. You know, Tyrone Taylor should be back. But, you know, where does this guy fit in if the Mets want to keep him around? Because, you know, he got precious roster spots here. Or is he a guy that maybe they trade similar to what they did with Eric Orsi? Maybe they trade him in the offseason early on for a piece they could use at the big league level.
I mean, that's one of the things the Mets are going to have to start doing. Again, here I am again, Dove, the guy, making it all biased and pro-Mets. It's not just me. The Mets are now a consensus top five, possibly top three farm system in Major League Baseball. So now we could almost use the Rays example, where every year the Rays have too many guys, they can't protect them all, and they find ways to move guys around, even if they move some of those Rule 5 eligible guys to other organizations to pick up guys that aren't eligible yet. Like, that's the thing that a team like the Rays will do. I don't see the Mets really getting to that point or level. They could even just buy players, obviously, if they want. But I believe next year, like December 2026, the Mets are going to have even a larger group of top 30-ish prospects, all Rule 5 eligible. So, yeah, you can't keep everyone. And I've seen it online with Nick Morabito. It's like, dude, I like him as well. Some things he's legit. There's fans that can see Nick Morabito starting as an everyday player. There's other fans that say good utility guy. And then there's the fans that say perfect. Trade him at the value while it's highest, as he's having a hot Arizona Fall League, which perennially makes sense for organizations. That's usually when the iron strikes hot and everything while the guy's hot. But as far as me, I wasn't necessarily comparing Nick Morabito like, oh, I want him to be the center fielder of the Mets. I'm also saying, if you want him to be a guy to replace someone, how about he's replacing Tyrone Taylor or Siri, and he's not replacing Nimmo and Soto? I'm going on a different level, 40-man, 26-man-wise, of him replacing people like that, the backup players. Or is he the outfield version of Luis Angel Acuña? And now we can debate the hit tools between Morabito and Acuña, who neither of which have shown the power of sorts, but there's a hit tool. And Nick Morabito possibly is even a little more consistently showing the hit tool. So does that even make him a replacement for Taylor, Siri, and a replacement of sorts for an Acuña? Not really, because of the infield stuff, but that's the rostering that I have in my head.
Chris Suero is a catcher. He's had, you know, some of the best advanced metrics with hard hit metrics in the entire Arizona Fall League. He's a top 20-ish prospect right now. Catching has always been taking Francisco Alvarez out of it. They have Torrens for another year, but the Mets organization as a whole in the last few years has been very light on catching. Impact catching, you know, you have a Hayden Sanger and guys like that, but it's not something they've been strong at. There is a couple of catchers on their top 30 now, Suero being one of them. He has to be added by next year. But the other thing is, with his performance, does he move himself into more of a, hey, this could be a piece in a discussion for, and I'm just throwing it out there, I'm not saying he would headline it, a Tarek Skubal, or bringing in a Joe Ryan, or bringing in a George Kirby, a really good potential arm, where they could protect maybe a Benj, a Jet Williams, or maybe some of the, you know, other guys, in not ripping out the tool, all the top fives, they could have some potential guys that could slide in. Suero to me is one of those, but you're trading from a standpoint of this, you know, Alvarez notwithstanding, there's not a lot of next level if you need a catcher in the system.
Yeah, I've been mentioning it for a little while now. If you were to do like a top five list of the Mets catching specific prospects, you're going to be naming a bunch of teenagers. And then Chris Suero. I know about the Parada thing. You know, it's been some years now with Kevin Parada with the ups and downs.
I didn't even mention him, and I didn't even look at him as even a desirable piece in a trade. Or is he, you know, because he doesn't really a defensive guy, is he even an option behind the plate? Has he improved?
Yeah, it's just one of those things where you have to dip all the way into the 19, 20-year-old range in the system. You have a guy like a Ronald Hernandez, who's kind of a quasi-catcher slash first baseman. He came along with Marco Vargas in the David Robertson trade, I believe, the other couple of years ago when they were sellers. So he's been ranked. He was ranked coming into the season. Then he had a very low offensive season. Then you have the younger guys, Davison Gutierrez, who I was hyping a lot going into spring and through spring, seeing some really good stuff. Young player, good balance with his emotions. He's able to handle certain things in the grind, but his numbers were up and down, a lot of it down. And then the top young guy, Yovani Rodriguez, who basically had the Mets franchise record for an IFA signing for one whole signing class until Elian Pena a year later broke that record by a lot. I very much believe in Yovani Rodriguez. Spoke to one of the scouts who used to work for the Mets, who's like, dude, I don't know why people aren't paying more attention still. How is Yovani Rodriguez still underrated? It baffles him as a professional scout. He's still a professional scout in Major League Baseball. So he doesn't get it. But yeah, the guy about Chris Suero, what do we do? Because talking with some staff, I even talked with a pitching coach last year who loves him. pitching teammates, even interviewing guys like Zach Thornton, a lefty in the Mets farm system. He said, Chris Suero is a monster. And he's one of those like ride or die, I'm going to live or die on the field behind the plate for my pitchers and for my team. And I believe he's a New York born guy. He's going to be one of those guys you dream about if he's on the Mets roster. But what makes him unique, of course, catching. He's progressing week to week. He's not an elite catcher. He's still young. And by the way, how many guys still play corner outfield and first base? But he could do it kind of more legitimately. A guy like Ronald Hernandez, you're kind of resting him in the farm system, having him DH in first base. But Chris Suero is such a major athlete, he can legitimately play corner outfield. So if you have a guy like that, that's what I've been semi-dreaming about. You let a guy like this with that intensity, he's like an Alvarez intense guy and teammate and like future role model. But if you have a guy like that on the roster, conceivably, you can go with a three-catcher roster if you needed to. You can have a Torrens, Alvarez, and then a guy like Suero where you're not hampering your bench because Suero can play the outfield and first base. So it's one of those game situations. You can have an Alvarez who's hot, get a day off, quote-unquote, DHing, like which the Mets tried to do a couple of times at the end, starving for offense. But then you think about it, if you do that going forward with a future Suero, you don't got to worry about anything happening to Torrens because Suero can come in. So it would be kind of perfect.
Absolutely. Dalton Varsho comparison, or that may be, you know, I know everybody hates comparisons, but a lot of people listening don't necessarily connect, you know, prospects and what their role would be in terms of, you know, themselves. So you look at somebody that they could maybe wrap their arms around or wrap their minds
around.
Yeah,
you think about it like a Varsho, or even thinking about it in better terms, think about it like a Schwarber, but better defensively in the outfield.
Right.
So a little less.
Not going to hit 50 home runs, but got some pop. Just we're not saying he's going to hit 50 home runs before.
Not home runs, but I'm comparing the versatility with a better glove than a Schwarber in corner outfield as a guy who can kind of fill in. Or even like the Blue Jays, right? They used to have like a three-man catcher situation briefly as well, I believe, and even in last year. You can have that kind of flexibility with a guy like Suero if he makes it. Because again, what are some of the cons to the pros of a guy like Suero? I believe as his power has shown and gone up this year, the K rate has gone up. So now everyone starts to worry about it. No one really cares about Ks in today's baseball, but overall hit tool, how much contact can he make at the AAA and major league level if the K rate is at a certain height in high A, double A?
Sure, absolutely. If you're not following Ernie Dove, you should be at Ernest Dove on X. Go to YouTube, the New York Mets Dove Report. Awesome stuff. He's not just citing stats. He's getting in the weeds. He's looking at the overall organization philosophies, trying to understand what the Mets are doing as an organization, where these prospects fit in, talking to scouts. It's really good stuff. If you're not on it, you should be. And the other part of the Arizona Fall League here, Ernie, is the arms. There's four arms out down there. And I don't think fans really know most of them. Brett Banks, Wyatt Huddapal. If I said his name wrong, you could correct me. Bryce Jenkins and Austin Trozier. If I mispronounced any of those, you could correct, of course. Mm-hmm. All of these guys are lower-level minors. I don't think you're going to see them on any top prospect report. They all look to be relievers, throw hard, walk a ton of guys, and don't need to be addressed on the 40-man for another year. But it's coming up in the next 12 months. And the Mets, and this is where you and I have talked about it a billion times, I've mentioned it a billion times on the show, the Mets are severely lacking in arms that could come up from the system like the Dodgers, that could come out of the bullpen. And I'm not saying they're the next Edwin Diaz. Hopefully, maybe Dylan Ross is or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But they don't have a Jack Dreyer like the Dodgers have or a Ben Kasparius that they could bring in. And they're good enough to get you through the regular season. Now, you'd hope that you'd have the next setup guy. Maybe you got to pay for that. But the Mets don't have that, and that's where you saw all the shuttling, the trash or treasures, the 4A arms. And I hope that this Arizona Fall League shows that maybe within the lower levels into AA, the next wave, next maybe Dylan Ross, who hasn't thrown a pitch yet, I understand that, but should be a part of next year's roster. You know, maybe they have some more of the Dylan Ross types, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, they did do what I was assuming, and now it turned into reality when even people were asking before the Mets season ended. When is Dylan Ross going to be Rule 5 protected? Because when you have a guy that throws 98 plus, and he's been as high as 102, but I feel like it lowered towards the end of the year, maybe trying to work on things like command and pitches and arsenal. So they did finally protect him already as the season was ending. I don't no idea why they didn't pitch him. He probably would have been a lot better than half the guys they were funneling in and out. But I guess, alas. Yeah, so Dylan Ross is the one guy. He's got the splitter. I love him a lot. I think he could be a back-end pen arm, as well as the other guy, of course, is Ryan Lambert. Those are the two guys as far as the sexy names in the Mets farm system. What do you do? Like, those are the guys that could conceivably be at least a seventh, eighth, or a ninth inning pitcher, which obviously means closer. As
Sure.
far as things like the Arizona Fall League, that's the direction a lot of teams can go in for Arizona Fall League. Pretty much every pitcher selected from the Mets organization are all guys who just lost innings throughout the year. So they were just basically there to just eat innings, build some kind of arm strength, get some different and newer eyes within the organization on them. A guy like Brett Banks, again, this is all extreme small sample size. Brett Banks had a rough up outing at least once in Arizona Fall League, but one of the cool extreme sample size stats, he's got like an 18K per nine inning rate going on right now. He's got like 4 innings, 8 strikeouts. A guy like Austin Tresser, to me, he was a wild card from when he was drafted. I even spoke to the pitching coach of his college who loves Austin Tresser and said, listen, he's just getting started. So that was something that was excited for me because we have a college arm who almost to me is like a high school arm as far as he wasn't really fully developed yet. So I was excited about what the Mets can do with a project arm like this who's still learning even while in college. And then ever since he got drafted, he's missed time every year. So the good thing about Austin Tresser in the Arizona Fall League is that he's pitching in it. So which is exciting enough for me. I believe he started off really bad, and the last two outings, I believe, have been scoreless. So just guys like this are doing well. But overall in the Mets farm system, you have a couple of arms. I've talked about my completely wild card arm of a Saul Garcia, who has some of the filthiest stuff in the Mets farm system, but he's never shown enough command in pro ball. So I keep comparing him for my own nothing reason to a guy like a Jerry's Familia, or maybe more people the newer age, if he's a next Deadneil Nunez with a guy who has that much natural movement on everything he throws. Those are the arms, but the entire Mets farm system has command issues pretty much. So if you wanted to go the route of rushing a guy to the majors, as other organizations have done, they may want to finally go the route of transitioning certain starters, maybe not even forever full time, but maybe call certain guys up. Like in my mind, if you really want pitch command and get a guy to transition briefly from starter to reliever to help the major league club, maybe you go a Jack Weininger route. Maybe you go a Zach Thornton route. Not saying I still don't project them as starters, but those are two of the starting pitchers with some of the best overall consistent pitch command in the farm system. So maybe those are the kind of guys you rush because they may not come up and walk four or five guys in an inning.
And you made a great point. I want to get to that in a minute on command in the Mets system. But one other name that is actually interesting in an environment where you just mentioned it, versatility is key. And I think he's very similar to Morabito. I don't think he's a guy that is going to get a lot of play. But DeAndre Smith, and I see him as maybe they're looking at him as possibly a depth option. Plays, if I'm not mistaken, he plays infield and outfield up the middle, second base short. Got a little pop, college bat that was drafted. He's 24 years old in double A, so maybe he's not a high potential prospect. I don't even think he's showing up if I'm looking here on any prospect list that the Mets have. But it's interesting he's in the AFL, has speed. Could be a very useful piece. Again, I think sometimes when we talk about prospects, we talk about Benj and McClain and Tong. But an organization, especially when you have the payroll the Mets have, and who the hell knows what the new labor agreement will come up with. And if it's like the NBA in any way, you're going to need cost control even more than ever, not just because of dollars and cents, because it may be part of a payroll, situation, a cap, or they'll be able to, manipulate teams that go a certain point to not make moves outside of their organization. So does DeAndre Smith fit in at all? Or is this another example of probably we'll hear a report in November, the Mets trade DeAndre Smith to the Rays for some
controllable reliever that has two more years before Rule 5 situation. I know. They'll probably do that anyway.
And it'll break your heart. You're going to become a Tampa Bay Rays fan. That's what I'm going to say. And when they move to Montreal, we're going to have to sing Oh Canada together. Eric Dove is going to become the, you know, Montreal Rays reporter. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, I know. I talked about it. I even joked about it. Even some former Mets prospects, even like a Paul Gervais. I believe he was briefly on the Tampa Bay Mets. I think he called them the Tampa Bay Rumble Ponies because the Rays at some point were adding up three or four guys that had just recently played for the Rumble Ponies.
Right.
I'm just trying to think, man. The thing about DeAndre Smith, I interviewed DeAndre Smith, so obviously I love the guy. He's a very humble young man. And he even said in his interview last year, so I'm still a work in progress. I'm still learning as I go with help from the Mets organization and the hitting lab and everything else. He's another guy, another version of a Nick Morabito. DeAndre Smith can play from four to six defensive positions on the field. So it's something that we interviewed about. He said, hey, I think the organization is having me test outfield, which they sure did because he's basically playing everywhere around the field. Even in the Arizona Fall League, I think eight games played, six stolen bases. Some of the walks is helping him get the stolen bases. But DeAndre Smith, as with the Nick Morabito, the power hasn't been showing in pro ball. So now we start getting into this thing. What do you do with a guy like DeAndre Smith? He plays up to six positions. He doesn't necessarily have to be the next future designated pinch runner in September every year. Some of the jokes, a couple of those guys over the years, even the Mets grabbed a guy who only was there to steal bases. DeAndre Smith can still have the athletic ability to play, again, four to six positions. What kind of hit tool is he going to have? The K rate has been pretty high. How much contact can he make? Making enough contact, he's a major league 26th man in my eyes for sure. Because now, again, we're getting into the Morabito. We're getting into the Acuna level of things for a guy like who can play infield, outfield on the edge of the bench and run him out there to, you know, pinch run at any moment. That would be his value. Now, again, we're going to get into my own two-way debate of sorts. Well, can a guy like this be replaceable? And that's always the question. But again, he's not even eligible yet. But he's an interesting guy because he hasn't stopped growing yet. Even as a college bat, like an Austin Tresor pitching-wise, he still has projectable stuff he hasn't grown into yet. We have to wait and see if it's going to all connect to a higher hit tool for it. Because he's even had some hot streaks during the season. And then he had a quick hot streak of a couple of games in Arizona Fall League. Will he ever have enough consistency to show off that speed and the versatility like a Jeff McNeil of sorts without the 300 hitting part? But with that versatility, he just, if enough of a hit tool, he makes it.
Yep. Is Tresor the one arm that you really are going to take away and watch over the next 12 to 24 months from the AFL guys? I mean, actually 12 months because he's going to be Rule 5 eligible a year ago. Is he like the one name that you're really watching out of that group?
Yeah, Tresor and Banks, I'm super excited about. Because, again, a lot of these guys, I just interviewed a lefty reliever, Colton Cosper. He was an undrafted guy who they shoved all the way from low A to triple A. But even Cosper, he was signed this past August after the draft, and he already has a new pitch. This is what the Mets organization is doing, which most of the time is a cutter, 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 and even some of the stuff between a sweeper or hard slider. The Mets are changing arms by the week, by the month. So it is exciting stuff. That's why I'm thinking a guy like Austin Tresor with his stuff, which hasn't really projected enough yet because he hasn't developed enough, and a guy like Banks, again, he already has eight strikeouts in four innings in Arizona Fall League. He, too, has certain newer pitches refined by the Mets. Those are some of the arms I'm talking about. I had a lot of excitement and hype with the Hood poll, and it looks like he was removed from Arizona Fall Leagues. Now I got to worry about what's going on with him. He was already touching 95 in the behind the scenes as he was getting back to health. So that's why I was excited going into Arizona Fall League for Wyatt Hootpal, because he was touching mid to upper 90s already in the backfields. Those are some of the guys. The other guys I'm just not as familiar with, but they're all going to be high A, double A caliber pen arms in 2026. So they're almost there. But we already talked about the other guys like Lambert and Ross, maybe Saul Garcia. Those are some of the arms we may be thinking about a lot quicker. But there's just arms everywhere. I just want to know, when are they going to have enough pitch command in the entire farm system to really start jumping guys to the majors?
And for, important again for fans who they, you guys may know it, but some may not. Just because they, these, you know, Morabito or Smith don't get added to the 40 man, and listening to Ernie's push whether they will be, the Mets don't have that many spaces, doesn't mean they're going to lose them. The other team just has to keep them on the roster for the full year. The Mets are probably pretty good at finding out who would get picked. So if they get traded, they probably think they're going to get picked. They probably think they're going to get another, you know, something of better value. None of the arms right now. That'll be more of a conversation for next year. You talked about command. I want to get into the coaching situation because I think there's a lot of misinformation and the whole thing has changed. The Mets are really good, by the way, of we probably already have a pitching coach in New York and they're not announcing it because the Mets don't leak anything. They didn't leak Jeff Albert. They didn't leak Kai Correa. This is not like when Brody Van Wagenen and Jeff Wilpon, every single coach was like, you know, who wants, it was like, you know, American Dance Off or something like that. And I'm losing the name of it. Shows you I don't know any pop culture. This is all done in the background. Mets have a very, Jeff Albert is part of a hitting philosophy. The pitching as a pitching philosophy, you've talked about it. From what I understand, listening to in the past, it's about hitting the ball hard and lift. It's about exit velo and lift on the hitting side. And, you know, you mentioned cutters and spin and things like that on the pitching side. I'm not so sure. I think driveline has a lot of influence. You could correct me if I'm wrong, throughout the organization, not just because of Yeager's, but I mean, obviously because of Yeager's, but I think that there's a lot of philosophies that driveline puts out that the whole league buys into. Some of that I don't know if is good for command. You mentioned that. So on both ends of the ball here, both sides of the ball, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, how the coaches are going to be fit into a philosophy, not bring the philosophy. That's the way I understand where the Mets are at on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things, too, that seems to anger a lot of the Mets fans. One of the easiest things that they do argue about, which I can understand. It's like, well, hey, everybody's different. Stop trying to pigeonhole all the players. You're screwing with them. And you see it with guys like Francisco Alvarez, who gets really cold, goes to AAA, hitting 500, comes back hitting 300 for a month. They all want to know, who do we blame? Because now that he's hot now, it's because of the coach. But one of the things that I've seen, and I started reporting on it from last year, I talked to some of the staff, talked to some of the scouting departments. Some of the people are no longer with the Mets. So now I know it's real because I'm even talking to them after the fact. They were changing things in a certain philosophy, hitting and pitching. I've been bringing it up since last year with the slugging, with the barrel rate, with the this and the plate discipline. They are still trying to teach what's the best pitch to do the most damage on. And maybe that's why some of the K rates were jumping last year, all the way from Dominican Summer League up to AA, AAA. The bats were getting adjusted to the new philosophy. And even again, with the pitching philosophy, there's a philosophy, but like I'm just saying now during this interview, they're teaching new pitches. And even a guy, even a college senior sign like a Brandon Sproat, he's learning a new pitch going into this year. Like the Mets are changing and altering things. They were from 2024 to 2025, guys were switching from the sweeper to the hard slider, except for a guy like Nolan McClain who just masters his wiffle ball. So he's different, I guess. But the Mets are changing things all the time. And when they're changing it, it's individual based. But they're going with a certain philosophy, hitting and pitching. People do need to honestly understand it. Now, it doesn't mean that no one's at fault or just blame one guy. I understand, but it's a group mentality of what they're teaching. And by the way, I know maybe a lot of people don't care. We have two championship affiliates, and everybody was above 500 through all the minor league systems for the Mets. There's some kind of winning going on that helps with good hitting and good pitching, which may have adjusted now, at least hitting-wise, from 2024 to 2025. I spoke with one of the hitting coaches who is being retained, and he's coming back for next year, but I'm not going to start throwing out names and stuff. But when I told him about Jeff Albert, he gave him the most praise I can think of in my life. He's like praising him like the god of hitting and an incredible role model and teacher. So it was exciting stuff for that one particular coach to know that there's someone getting a much deserved promotion based on how amazing they are and how they've been with the structure that they still utilize now, all hitting throughout all the affiliates.
Do you think that the coaches that were let go, A, was it a bad fit or did they take the blame because of the social media situation? Like I look at Jeremy Hefner. You bunch of command up and down the organization. Command, a year ago, the bullpen was horrible with the walks. They were able to survive it to a certain extent until they met the Dodgers. This year, the starting rotation. I mean, part of that is the type of pitchers they had to throw out there. But again, the walks were insane. Command, if you just look at the numbers without knowing anything about these kids, command up and down, the walk rates with some of these, I mean, Dylan Ross just got better at it. Insanely high, sometimes 7, 8, 9 per nine innings. Did Hefner take the fall on that? Did Chavez and Barnes take the fall where they weren't a fit, or they were a fit and they just took the fall because somebody had to? My feeling is those guys, just all the three, including Hefner, just weren't fits for the future. Hefner, I'm a little surprised about. The other two, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, new age baseball, I am the older guy still. I'm the shake your fist in the clouds type of person, and I know I'm getting up there age-wise. I did think that Hefner was going to keep being retained because of the analytics, because of everybody's love for his support and the pitchers, and there's been nice things. I used to have very, very, very brief random communication with Hefner when I could, just to praise what's going on. I was surprised by him being moved on. The hitting thing, maybe it did one of those theories or conspiracy theories. You blame guys like this and get rid of them because of a bad season. Maybe that's some of the stuff. But what are some of the stuff being translated from coach to players? And I've heard about this. And I even heard about a couple of guys, even some newer guys. You get brought in as a coach, everybody loves, loves, loves. I'll hear from at least one person that was like, well, I know in some past stuff, there was some kind of, you know, disarray in the communication between player and coach. We're not going to know because, like you just said, also the Mets don't leak anything anymore. I like to think I have some of the highest sources that people can think of in their head for Ernie Dubb, right, if you see my social media, but I'm not told certain things until it already happened. So you can't know. I wish I could have a lot more super information based on some super sources, but it's not always how it works because the organization is not talking.
No,
that's a generalized thing. And by the way, one of the main things that I've been saying for years now, and people need to understand, and you can go on my X on one of my top posts and say if I'm telling the truth or not, but I do know certain things. And one of the things I know is that these things are being delegated out to Stearns. He's in charge. It's his organization from the baseball side, from the operation side. Steve Cohen is not one of those guys like the Wilpon era. He's not calling in asking about a certain player being signed or a minor leaguer being brought up. It's just not the thing. He's letting the coaches coach. He's letting the staff do the staffing thing. It's going to be up to them, and he'll find out like some of us, like a fan. Although he'll jump in for some of the super contracts, because wouldn't you if it was involving nine figures?
You have to, yeah.
But
yeah,
he's going to let the guys do what they do. But people just need to understand, even at the major league level. And I've been wondering who's going to get replaced. Do they promote certain guys? When they talked about when this all went down, I'm like, hey, Earn, who can get called up from a pitching coach perspective? I have some of my favorites, and I blurted out a couple of them. And one of them I heard privately, and I posted about it, was being let go from the organization. So that takes care of him. But one of my favorites and one of the player favorites, Dan McKinney, he's actually coaching in the Arizona Fall League. So he's one of those names out there. I'm trying to think if this is going to be year three, I believe, for Dan McKinney in the organization as a pitching coach. He coached at low A, then he coached at what, high A, then double A. So we'll see where he goes now going into 2026. There are some guys being retained. I know some hitting coaches being retained. So they are kind of continuing the process. I just don't know if any of these guys are going to be jumping up anymore to the highest level. So yeah, that's why they're going probably outside organization. Guys may be tied to Mendoza or Stearns from another team, another franchise. It makes sense. But again, people have to keep remembering, these aren't all Stearns' people. You know, he started bringing in certain, even like a Jeff Albert, brought in his own people. That's something I'm learning. Hey, what do you think about Jeff Albert? Well, he brought me in. Well, there's a bias, I'm sure. But
yeah,
that's the thing. Stearns came in, he's bringing in his guys, and then his guys are bringing in their guys. This is going to be a process that does take time. And I know none of us want to hear about time because we want our championship, because Stearns said, you know, Cohen said so. I get it. But now that we're starting over again in the front office, this is what we've had to do. And look how it's building.
Yep, it's building up. Desi Drusil, is there any momentum with maybe, I've heard some good things about him. I think he's a driveline guy attached to Yeagers. He's still technically, the door was open because
they said they were just, hey, go look for a job. But when they say go look for the job, we like you, but maybe we don't like you that much. So I'm curious your thoughts on Desi Drusil, just because he was the one name that was hanging out there without clarity to a certain point.
Well, that's the thing, too. Some of these guys, minor league and major league, it's not always about guys being let go. I had a lot of my favorites. I had certain sources in the Mets organization last year, and then a lot of those guys, they weren't let go. They were, their contract ended, and some of them even very respectfully took an amazing opportunity, and they brought some people with them to that opportunity. But they still praised, to this day, praising Cohen and the entire Mets organization and franchise. So there are guys still leaving on good terms as well, so maybe that's one of those things. Some of the coaching staffs that are being retained, it's because it's in their contract to have been retained for maybe like a two-year deal. Like, even some of these coaches of sorts, they're not all just like deals by the month or the year because it's minor leagues. Some of these guys are being constructed to be around for at least a couple of years contractually. So guys, but when guys do, their time is done. Their time is done technically on paper. Now what do you do? We've seen it. Now guys move around, even the coaching staff. Talking to the highest sources on the Mets, they say, hey, these guys move around. That's just how baseball works in professional sports. These are highly talented, very intelligent guys and women, but they don't always just stay and get promoted like a regular job, 9 to 5,
right,
a year.
Sure. Yep. There's a lot of other factors going in there. If there is an example of the Mets process versus outcome type evaluation, isn't Dick Lovelady that? I mean, the fans are going crazy. And what's funny is that I mentioned the 40-man. He's actually on the 40-man now. So they're technically at 40 minus one, Diaz 39. So they really don't have any 40-man spots. I was wrong. I mean, because if you look at that, let's say 39 because of Diaz. I mean, because he got a big league deal. Now you look, small sample size. He's got a very good chase rate, whiff rate. Nobody really hits the slider, sweeper, things like that. But is that an example, without too deep into Dick Lovelady, who's a lefty, that counts for something. Maybe that's where we need to start looking. What do the Mets value? Is it all off speed, chase, spin rate? Obviously, you know, you know that.
Yeah, they love their spin rate these days. That's really what it's all about, spin rate and velocity. It's about guys getting that velocity up a couple of ticks, and then the spin rate on all of their different pitches and mixing it up. And that's some of the things they want to see. But obviously, I did also post on X. It didn't make much sense to me, but I'm not going to be mean or negative or mock the move for Lovelady. I just didn't understand it because
I don't get it. Other than the fact that he's lefty and he has some good small sample metrics on his sweeper and slider. Very good.
But I just, maybe, obviously there's things we don't know. That's the point. Apparently there was a market for Lovelady, because if he's a guy who was waved up and down and DFA'd like 2-3 times, what would be the need of a major league contract? Just bring him into camp if he makes it. But then again, now making the jokes about Steve Cohen's money, whatever his contract is, I'm sure it's like $1 million or less, which is a lot of money. That'd be life changing for me. But for a guy like this, these are the kind of guys where he might still break camp and not even be with the organization and bank the money that he's getting. So I'm not super worried about it, but it just seemed confusing. As a transaction, it didn't make sense, especially now. Why in October are you solidifying a roster spot now? Now, again, at the end of the World Series, I guess, when a bunch of the rentals are all like gone from the roster, we'll figure things out.
You don't know who they're going to offer contracts in arbitration. Yeah. Probably a lot of non-tenders, guys who are hurt, maybe re-signed to a minor league deal or something like that. They did that last year. They did that with Alzolay, you know, Drew Smith, things like that. So, you know, you might see some of that. But it is peculiar. And the other part is, you know, you have to realize that at one point, Brooks Raley, who everybody, he's going to be retained, very reasonable option, he was a nobody. So the Rays grabbed him. He was a nobody. And I think the part that the fans and the media fuels this is, you're not just going to be shopping for Pete Alonso and those guys. This organization will continue to do the Dick Loveladies of the world. They're just going to do it. And it's going to drive you nuts, and you're going to act like you know. And the only thing we know is what we see on Baseball Savant. The only thing we know is what we see on Baseball Reference. And that's not enough. That's not enough. So I'm sitting back and saying, look, yeah, their reputation coming off of this year was bad when it came to arms. And I see a lot of things in the minor leagues that tell me most of these kids are going to come up and going to drive you bananas with the walks and be shuttled up and down. But you, to your point, they're working on them in the back end. And it's not about those numbers. It's about the process. And even Nolan McClain, nobody would have predicted that he could have came up and did what he did. I mean, he looked like DeGrom and Harvey. And I don't think that that was just an anomaly. I mean, there was serious stuff on the process, on the spin, that tells you, wow, this is a special guy. So they're doing something right.
I mean, that's why credit needs to be given where credit is due. And again, top three-ish farm system, and that's being conservative. Now, those are things that have only happened now in the last year. They were probably 10, 11, 12, 13 range last year. This is how much development the Mets are having right now, and credit needs to go to the organization and the staff. But, and I've said it ad nauseum at this point. We're going to do this forever. Obviously, it was by one game they missed it. If Manaea and Senga pitch 20 starts like normal pitchers, the Mets are competing in the playoffs. That's obvious.
Off the bat, the Mets underachieved based on their run differential. They underachieved by three games, if you buy into that. We know they gave the playoff spot away, but we also know, looking at Toronto, we also know, looking at L.A., maybe they could have snuck past L.A. if they got a good McClain start and then somehow found a way late against their bullpen. They need work. They're not in a bad spot, maybe like they were in 2019 or 2020. They're in a better spot, but they need some work. And I think that segues to the last conversation here, that you talk about, you're the biggest prospect hugger out there. You got T-shirts, everybody knows you, but you're realistic. You understand organization building. Here's what I understand. As you go into a market where maybe a Tarek Skubal will be available, where maybe a Joe Ryan or a George Kirby or the next big arm that you could get that's becoming expensive, you maybe could grab. You're not going to do that for free. You're not going to do that with Mark Vientos alone. You know that. I know that. And we know Vientos, Beatty, those guys might be expendable at the big league level, depending on what a Detroit would want for Skubal, a team that's still contending. But outside of, from what I understand, and this is not good information, outside of McClain and Benj, it's open season in the right deal. Is that what you would do? Do you hear that? Do you think McClain and Benj are not as untouchable as what is kind of being thrown out there? Give us what you think is reasonable for the Mets to start putting into, like, basically a bucket and say, okay, if we want to go after Skubal, we're going to have to accept the pain here. And who can they pull back and say, no, 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 no. We're not going there, and I don't care what, you know, the media, John Heyman and the fans say on X come December 15th. This is the right thing to do to hold on. Because Garrett Crochet, from what I understand, they could have gotten him. They pulled back. Although I don't know if they could have matched the last year at this time. I don't know if they could have matched the Paget, the White Sox game. A lot of people don't, and I wrote about that over at my premium after he had the big start against the Yankees. That was a good package the White Sox gave up. I mean, the Red Sox gave up to the White Sox. I'm sorry. So it wasn't like it was chopped liver that went the other way. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and again, too, like a year later, like I was saying, from last year, the Mets were more pushing towards a mid farm system rather than top three, top five. So
top five now. So they're top five, which comes with a lot of privilege to make deals, but you could go from top five to number 18 after you rip up the farm system in one off season. You know that.
Yeah, and the Mets do have depth, and I've been talking about it. I did somewhat report it from last year when I started asking to some of my top sources, and they were basically saying, you're going to be very sad if we get this deal. Now, it doesn't mean that they said in detail, Dove, we offered, we took it back. That's not the information that was given to me.
There was a lot of painful deals Stern said on the table at the deadline that fans would not have liked. Let's put it that way. He mentioned that.
Yeah, but even in the Crochet situation, I was told the Mets made an offer. I was going to be very sad. But I wasn't given details after the fact of, oh, we took it back or we said, screw you. That's right. Not the information I was given afterwards. I was right. Only told it was going to involve top Mets. So, but for this time around, you do move a guy for a guy like Skubal. And whether fans want to joke about it because they hate and love everyone by the second. So I know like maybe everyone now finally loves McClain, who I've been talking about for like 2 years, everybody. Where have you been?
Right.
So you're talking about this secret ace. I was mentioning him from like 2 years ago when a coach was telling me to buy stock in Nolan McClain. It's in my post. You can search and check the receipts and all that. But I would also think that a guy like Benj, as a stereotype, not stereotype, bad wording, he's a Stearns draft pick, so maybe that also makes him untouchable because he's a Stearns guy. So maybe you start with McLean. Stop. That's Captain Obvious. Why would you move an ace? I know it's school.
Even for Scooble, if you could sign him. Even for Skeens, if you could sign him. I don't
I
think
mean, okay,
Skeens is going to get
Scooble and
traded.
Skeens, and it's basically what? It would have to be like.
I wouldn't give him up. I think they have enough depth where you shouldn't have to give him up to get one of those guys, personally.
No. Like, why? Even in general, again, we're going to talk about money, which pisses people off. Like, buy whatever. I get it, Mets Twitter. I understand. Spend $500 million because we need to win. Give them all 10-year deals. There's going to be a bunch of 38-year-olds on the Mets 26-man roster. And then you're screaming while we suck this year and blame the ownership, right? Well, let's not get into that nonsense. But yeah, that's why you need some of the younger players. But even if you acquire a guy like Scooble, I could understand, but you got to keep McLean. I would think you're keeping Benj. But yeah, after that, I don't know who would be considered untouchable in the entire Mets farm system when they're trying to be all in once again and they have depth. When you talk about a Benj, if they were to trade Benj, you could technically say, well, cool, we still have AJ Ewing, who's younger than him. But I don't know. I think the rankings, and by the way, the Mets organization, like a lot of organizations, they rank their prospects, by the way, everybody. This shouldn't be a shocker. They literally
And it
rank.
may not be the same as what MLB.com or
No.
Baseball Prospectus or Fangraphs. And that's not a knock on those guys. They do their research. But quite honestly, they're not getting to the weeds. It's very hard to get into the weeds. And even when we do that stuff over here at Beyond the, the Beyond the Mic, we do and have fun and you could talk to execs. It's all someone's opinion. And some of it's educated speculation. And at the end of the day, they're going to be right and you're going to be wrong. Look at what Zach Scott talks about with Pete Carl Armstrong, who, by the way, still shows gaps in his game, which make you wonder, is he sustainable? And yes, I understand it was a rental, and we could argue that. That's a different conversation. But I don't think they gave up the next Jared Kelnick is not really much, but it's not like that. It shouldn't be looked at as, well, that's the Jared Kelnick deal now. You know, it's not at that point. But that's a separate conversation. But my point is, there are things behind the scenes that they look at that, well, we just don't know.
I mean, we could still go back into the hindsight. I was very sad to lose Pete Carl Armstrong, of course, because when I saw him and Alvarez, they were like two teenagers who were better than everybody on the field in low A at 19 years old. So that's why I was so excited about the guys. But maybe from the Mets perspective, going back in time, you do realize that he had a shoulder surgery when he was traded. So I've seen prospects literally never make it past double A after
Right.
their surgeries. Even a guy like
Sure.
Adilson Herrera just jumps into my mind. I
Sure.
saw him as a young second base power bat, and he just never showed up again after one of his
Maybe
surgeries.
like a Gleyber Torres never showed up
So you have like a 19, 20-year-old out for the year with a shoulder injury as a bat, which usually destroys your power. There was an old right fielder some years ago in the Noah Syndergaard trade. I hyped him as the guy to replace Granderson when Granderson's contract was going to run out. He had a shoulder
I
surgery.
remember this. Yeah, this Spanish guy they got,
There
the
was
Dominican
him.
center.
He had a shoulder surgery. The power never came back. He had a leg injury, out of baseball. So it's just one of those. And then, by the way, even Pete Carl Armstrong, shoulder surgery. Don't know how he's going to come back. He swings at literally everything this year, and then he started missing more of the swings, and that's why
And
he
he
fell
get
off some
not
memory.
and he's not hit. I mean, look, he gets around on a fastball. You know what could happen, but
Yeah.
against the lefty, not as much. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Maybe you don't want to answer this. If you're Ernie Dove, the GM, and you have to say, okay, McLean, Tong, Sprout, you can't keep all three. One has got to go in a trade. Which one do you not keep? And if it goes down to, two out of three have to go, who's your keepers? And McLean, is it that obvious?
Ooh. Yeah, if I were to have to take one out, and I believe I've said it, publicly, of the three in a package for Scooble Skeens, or I really wouldn't still do it for a reliever. I don't care how good they are because pen arms are pen arms. So if it was one of those ridiculous packages that you got to do for an all-star pitcher, you're going to lock up. Of the three, I would most be willing to part with Brandon Sproul.
Okay,
And
fair enough.
again, there's some command stuff with him. There's age stuff with him, says
But
the
if you
old
know
guy.
that,
No.
the other teams know that. So I got to think of Detroit says, okay, no McLean. It can't be no McLean, no Tong. It's got to be, you can't do McLean, no Benj, no Tong. It's got to be, okay.
And Detroit's a team looking to contend, so you may have to give up a baby. You may have to give up something a little. That's a painful trade. Historically, yeah. The Mets trades for aces, Hampton, Viola are the two that come to mind. Maybe to a lesser degree, Brett Saberhagen, Santana. They weren't that painful. Maybe at the time there was some, but in the long run, you could argue that the Viola trade was more painful at that point, even though he nearly won a Cy Young the next year because you got Kevin Tappany and Rick Aguilera, and there was a lot of useful pieces, but nobody that you couldn't replace. Kevin Tappany wasn't, he was an all-star a few times, but he was not, I would say, maybe mid-rotation guy. Cedeno and Dotel, reliever, maybe a steroid guy, we don't know, had a pop-up year. Santana, none of them worked out. Even Gomez was, he was okay. So this might be more painful, if you think about it, for a Skubal and something like that.
I mean, it could. And I know fans, again, they want to hate and love everybody by the week. But I would think and guess, without all the true intel, some of the players that they hate on and off, like Vientos, Beatty, there's a lot of love for Mauricio. I think it's more consensus. Everyone just loves Mauricio, maybe the personality and the superpower that he can have when he makes contact. Mm-hmm. But I would assume that there's value for guys like Beatty, Vientos, maybe even for Acuna, not in a Skubal deal unless he's one of the third or the fourth guy in it. But these guys can still have value even if you don't value them at all because you hate them and you're mad in a bad season. So I think those guys could be moved, and I've been saying it for like 2 years now. At least one's got to move. Are you really going to break camp with Beatty, Mauricio, Acuna, Vientos? Are you really breaking camp with the four of them? Why?
No.
You can't even do it even defensively. Run prevention-wise, you can't do it. You better start over. It doesn't mean I want them to sign some 35-year-old, one-year guy with a better glove, and we're going to do this all over again. But maybe it's not an OMG-type guy, but they can't do this again. We can't forever do the Ike Duda situation. How much? We got to stop doing this. So I would think at least one of those guys is moving. If you're going to make a huge trade for a potential all-star veteran, I would think one of the top three arms is going to get moved. And I've been mentioning another guy. After the top three, if you pretend all three are now major leaguers, they deserve it, who's the top pitching prospect in the Mets organization? Well, according to like MLB Pipeline, the next man up is Will Watson. So I don't know how much – he's a double-A guy now already, so maybe he already starts triple-A. Is that a high enough level for a team like the Marlins or a team like Detroit – to ask for him as almost a centerpiece of a trade, thinking you can have him in your rotation somewhere in 2020.
The question would be, Miami doesn't care about marketing a trade.
Well,
Detroit has to market the trade. So sometimes marketing of the trade, because fans will say, Will Watson, who is he? Because nobody's talking about him at that point. Mm. Nobody's. Real quick, because we got to wrap up. Beatty, Vientos, Mauricio, Acuna. I think Beatty's the only one that I would maybe say I have some pain in giving up. I'm not a believer that Mauricio will ever be more than a body. I think he's always going to drive you crazy with his instincts. And I think he's one of those guys that just, to me, reeks of body. Vientos is one-dimensional and streaky, and I think he's replaceable. And Acuna, to me, profiles as a backup. I'm being maybe harsh, but that's kind of like my top line. What are your thoughts? And as we wrap up here, what do you think?
I mean, I do agree. And my thing is, for the last 2-3 years, my little rankings of sorts have had to keep moving. I mean, it is what it is. I used to have Beatty at the top. Then I started to jump Mauricio up. Then I had Vientos. You know, everything moves around. But again, if you're really, truly going to talk about run prevention, defense, speed, which part of that is Vientos contributing to on the Mets? So I really want to know what the true new model is going to be for the Mets organization going forward. Is it going to be pitching and defense and speed and spin rate and all that fun stuff? Do you want to move on and risk a guy like Mark Vientos being a 35 home run a year bat somewhere? I don't know where it is. Maybe he ends up sticking at third base. Like an Alec Bohm, wasn't he terrible? And then he was okay.
Yeah.
So if he can be an average fielder that he doesn't hurt the team over there, he may be a 30 home run bat for the next 5-6 years.
Sure.
Is he going to replace Pete Alonso at first? That would be a huge – everyone would be mad, even people that love Vientos.
Right.
Guy like Acuna, what do we do? Is Acuna our new Guillorme? Is he going to be 5 years on the bench and that's what he does? there's value
And
to
there's value there. There's value there for sure. I mean, if he could really start to, I know they didn't put him in the outfield, but maybe get some reps at center. I know there's been debate about how much he could handle that. Acuña has value as a pinch runner and a around the diamond backup, but I don't see more than that. I mean, and that's fine. I mean, you got a bad contract, Max Scherzer, off your books, and maybe you could say Scherzer could help, and he might have been able to help. But that wasn't where they were going at that point. They needed that. They needed to, we could argue that. I didn't want to trade Verlander or Scherzer unless they got something. I think Verlander they might have gotten something with. We'll see, at that point. So what do you got coming up, Ernie Dove? We've had this long state of the union here. The Mets prospects, Mets organization philosophy is what everybody gets crazy about. And let's see what happens as we get into the hot stove. So what's next for Ernie Dove as we start to head into the off season in about a week?
I mean, hopefully more of the same, more interviews to come. I've recently, again, interviewed Brett Banks. I interviewed Colton Cosper, who's like a just a great young Southern gentleman. If you want to watch that video and see a young, humble, hardworking, undrafted guy who has nobody talking about him, no one's going to talk about him next year. But he may be an interesting guy to keep an eye on. And you're going to say, hey, I learned about it from Earn and from Talking Mets. There's going to be guys out there. There's going to be more interviews to come. I have a few interviews lined up still with a couple of prospects. One of them is one of the top prospects in the organization. Even some of the guys in Arizona Fall League. I have another guy I want to interview. I'll probably wait until the season's finished out of respect to him to make sure he's rested up. I'll interview him. So expect more interviews on the New York Mets Dove Report. And probably for better or worse, like the deadline, I'll go through my grieving process through winter. If guys get traded, I'll make the videos about how sad I am. I'll probably be back on Talking Mets to talk about my post sadness for my video of the guys who left. And maybe I'll at least try to console myself what we're getting back and how the value is going to also affect the system as well. Maybe it changes things. If long-term veterans come in, maybe that means I have to part with more guys. We can talk about it on a future show, whose spot they may be taking at that point.
Ernie, you're the best. The Ernest Dove Report, New York Mets Dove Report, at Ernest Dove on X. Be well. I'm sure we'll talk more. Buckle up. It's going to be a wild off season, my friend.
Oh, I know it is.
And that's Ernie Dove at Ernest Dove on X, the New York Mets Dove Report on YouTube. If you're not watching it, you're missing out. All right, let's take a quick break, wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We're back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. A great segment by Ernie Dove. I don't know if I could really top that. Just want to let you guys know some things coming out this week on the premium content. We'll go and dive into arbitration eligible players. I'll give you my thoughts on some of the arbitration eligible players the Mets have coming up, whether they should be tendered a contract, whether they should be non-tendered. We'll dive into that. I'm also going to go back and dive a little deeper. I mentioned it a couple of times the last couple of weeks, and I mentioned it again today on the history of Mets, big deals for big aces. How did they make out? How did it really go? Maybe it'll give you some inkling as to the risk or reward when it comes down to guys like Tarek Skubal or some of the other arms that we've talked about potentially being available. And I'm sure there'll be tons of other fun stuff. Just keep going to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Check out the chat room. Check out the premium subscription if you so desire. Obviously, you could leave me a message. You could even get the show over at TalkingMetsPodcast.com or anywhere else you'd like to be. Want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. And of course, you could get me on the official talkingmetspodcast.com website. You can get premium content. You can interact with me. You get the show. You could chat. Check it out if you haven't, and I'd love to see you there. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Enjoy your week. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.